Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. In 2011, the FCC issued a report detailing the lack of quality local news reporting in the U.S. The report says, in most ways, today's media landscape is more vibrant than ever. The digital tools that have helped topple governments abroad are providing Americans powerful new ways to consume, share, and even report the news. Yet in many communities, we now face a shortage of local, professional, accountable reporting. This is likely to lead to the kinds of problems that are not surprisingly associated with a lack of accountability, more government waste, more local corruption, less effective schools, and other serious community problems. In fact, this report found that between 2003 and 2008, the number of reporters covering California government in Sacramento dropped from 40 to 29. It also found that daily newspapers cut their editorial spending by $1.6 billion between 2006 and 2009. So we know the numbers are bleak. We often hear about cutbacks. But in California, local media outlets, even hyper-local news organizations, are cropping up all over the place. Communities increasingly ignored by the local news industry are the focus of these hyper-local websites. So on today's Your Call, we are talking about the state of local news. Where do you go for local news? And what do you want from local news? What is at stake if a community does not have a quality local news outlet? Today we're joined by John McManus, founder of GradeTheNews.org, a consumer report on Bay Area news. He's the author of Market-Driven Journalism, Let the Citizens Beware, and Don't Be Fooled, A Citizen's Guide to News and Information in the Digital Age. And John joins us from Truckee. Hi, John. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Rose.
Nice to have you. We're also joined by Bob Callow, executive editor of Richmond Confidential. This is an online news service produced by the Graduate School of Journalism at UC Berkeley for and about the people of Richmond. With 15 full-time reporters, Richmond Confidential covers education, development, politics, culture, and crime. And they're currently running stories about giving North Richmond's kids a safer place to play, and another one about labor and environmental groups joining forces on refinery issues. Bob is also a senior lecturer at UC Berkeley's Graduate School of Journalism, and he joins us from Berkeley. Hi, Bob. Welcome to the show.
Good morning.
Good morning. And we're joined by Robert Gammon. He's co-editor of the East Bay Express, an alternative weekly newspaper serving Berkeley, Oakland, and the San Francisco Bay East Bay area. The top story right now is about who's profiting from Oakland's gun violence. Robert joined the staff in 2004 after spending 6 years as a reporter with the Oakland Tribune. He writes for the Full Disclosure and 7 Days sections. Hi, Robert. Good morning.
Hi.
Great to have you. So why don't we just first start off by talking about what's at stake with the loss of local reporting, and what are we really facing right now, John, when we look at the local reporting landscape in mostly northern Central California?
I think what we're seeing locally and nationally is somewhat similar, which is basically the implosion of the backbone of American journalism, which is the major metro papers like the Chronicle, the Mercury, the Contra Costa Times. They have shrunk incredibly, shockingly. The Mercury News once had about 400 reporters. Now they're down to about 100. The Chronicle had over 500, down to a little over 100 now. So we're seeing many fewer professional reporters. On the positive side, we are seeing the growth of some of these small, hyperlocal, and local operations that you just mentioned. But I think on balance, the loss has been far greater than the gain. And the results of that, I think if you wanted to capsulize what the result of that is on democracy, it's we're becoming blinded. We don't know what we don't know, which isn't being reported. But there are many, many stories out there, I think, now that aren't being covered.
Yeah.
As someone once said, it's a great time for a corrupt politician.
Well, I think you make a great point there. I love that line, we don't know what we don't know, because if you are sort of obsessed with sites like Facebook and Twitter, like so many of us are, it feels like we're totally bombarded with information. But anytime I talk with a friend about what's going on in her own backyard, she usually doesn't know.
Yeah, I think we're losing the signal and the noise.
Well, what are your thoughts on that, Bob? John says we're dealing with an implosion of journalism. Do you agree?
I don't disagree with the basic idea. I think Richmond is a special case because, and I think it's illustrative of a lot of other things, is that Richmond was never really served by journalism, healthy or not. Mm-hmm. You know, if you go back to the glory years, Contra Costa Times was always kind of looking east, at least, you know, since the 80s. So our project in Richmond is pretty unique in that this is a community that was essentially unseen and invisible. There was one single narrative that Bay Area media applied to it. And, you know, I think we've worked really hard to kind of undo that and experiment with it. What we're doing is unusual. And in a way, it's hard to say what it really means. In other words, we said 15. This year I had 18 full-time reporters covering Richmond, which is incredible, of course. But remember, they're not being paid. So this is a kind of a many moving part work in progress where we're trying to combine journalism education and filling this need. But in filling it, it's been thrilling to kind of try to figure out how do you build a public conversation? Because I think what's lost when John is talking about what's lost is, you know, a rich and informed public conversation that used to be part and parcel of American life in which journalism played a big part. Not the only part, I would have to say. You know, we had a coherent society. Our society is starting to fracture, and that's a part of the problem as well.
So you brought up a number of points there. So you've got 18 reporters. Are these mostly student journalists from UC Berkeley?
Incoming graduate students. So are they? You know, they're learning.
So right.
They're not as efficient. They're. It's not like they're talented and they're bright. So we are kind of. It's kind of a shock troop approach. But it has, you know, our goal is to basically build a public conversation in Richmond. We know who our readers are. We are listening to them. And it's been, you know, I think we are, and with UC Berkeley moving to Richmond, certainly my hope is that we can continue being a part of that community.
And it's really an amazing site because I'm looking at it right now. You've got stories covering everything from Chevron failed to replace corroded pipeline to the Lady Eagles basketball team winning their first tournament game in more than 10, is that years?
Yeah,
I think some of the text gets cut off on the headlines.
It's been fascinating. What's also fascinating is that we also exist on Facebook, so the conversation on Facebook it's different from the conversation on our site, which is kind of part of this kind of learning about how do you deal with news online. You know, I don't want to be Pollyanna about this. I mean, you know, again, you know, this is a case where the reporters are paying for the privilege of reporting on a community. So, you know, when we get around to sustainability, you know, obviously I can't say that I have big answers for you. But right now, I think the presence of a kind of an open, transparent, trusted source in Richmond is making a little bit of difference for the people there.
Yeah, and again, Richmond Confidential is an online news service produced by the Graduate School of Journalism at UC Berkeley for and about the people of Richmond, California. And we'll talk later about the business model because that is one of the number one questions. But before we do that, Robert, you're co-editor of the East Bay Express. What would you add to the more, you know, just what's your assessment of local news and what we lose or what we've lost because of so many cutbacks?
Yeah, well, I agree with John McManus. You know, the sheer number of reporters, journalists overall that have been lost over the past decade is really staggering. And it's not just among the big newspapers. It's also in all weeklies. Our staff is, you know, 75% smaller today than it was 10 years ago. The same thing is true with the SF Weekly, the Bay Guardian, the Metro in San Jose. They've all had huge cutbacks, and this resulted in fewer stories being written about local communities. I think Richmond Confidential and its sister site, Oakland North, and also Mission Local in San Francisco, are somewhat, they're unusual because they're being run by a major university. So if you live in a town that isn't affiliated with a major university, you're not going to get this kind of model likely. And so it's great for the folks of Richmond, and they're doing a great job out there.
Did you say that
it being transferable to other communities and who don't have this kind of, you know, marquee journalism school attached to it?
Your staff at the East Bay Express has been cut by 75%.
Well, that's true. Yes,
wow.
And that's the same thing at the Mercury News. I mean, they probably lost 80%, and Chronicles in 80% range as well.
That's incredible. So, how do you decide then what to cover at that point?
Well, it's far fewer stories available, far fewer investigative stories. What you end up doing is covering things in a kind of a superficial way if you're trying to fill a newspaper, and so you just can't go in depth on stuff as much as you'd like to do.
Well, I'd love to give out the phone number right now, and I'd love to hear from listeners on this issue. What are your thoughts on the state of local news? Where do you go to find out what's happening in your community and your own backyard? And what do you want from local news? And also, if you have seen, if you maybe subscribe to a newspaper, for example, what are the changes you've seen after experiencing so many cuts? I mean, 75%, that's a huge percentage. The toll-free number is 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org or leave a comment on our website, yourcallradio.org. So, John, did we lose John again? Sorry, we're having a bad line with John. Bob, talk a little bit about what we do lose with so few reporters covering local issues.
Well, I mean, you know, it's funny. I really agree with Robert about, you know, if you don't have a major institution in the university. I mean, what's happening at Berkeley is happening in a lot of other places around the country where journalism schools, which I think in the past there was always that, you know, ongoing and, you know, kind of beer and popcorn conversation of like, what's the point of journalism graduate school? You just get a job. In the last 5 years, it's changed in the sense that this is where journalism is happening as the industry is kind of cratering and all this change is going on. But he's absolutely right. I mean, if you're living in Austin, if you're living in Cambridge, if you're living around a place, there's going to be these nonprofit efforts. But I personally, I'm not really that kind of nonprofit journalism by itself. You know, I don't have a lot of faith is going to be able to muster up. I mean, I think we have to be realistic and say it's the collapse of commercial journalism that has taken away the conversation from a great majority of Americans. And that's where I think ultimately the real challenge lies, because nonprofits are, you know, we're just as dependent on funding as commercial people are. So depending on how funders go, and they can wander about philosophically just like anyone else, you can find your plans up in the air.
So, yeah. You make a really great point. I remember when I took a road trip through Oklahoma, Mississippi, and Texas, it was amazing I loved changing the dial on the radio. And really the only thing you can find is religious stations and conservative stations. And we also had those stories a couple years ago where, because Clear Channel owns so many radio stations, right, when there are natural disasters in areas, the people don't even find out about it because everything's automated.
But what is interesting, though, is that on one hand, I mean, I often, you realize that if you're interested, you have to say this is a glorious time for information, right? Mm-hmm. If part of your daily life is seeking information, I think you have to feel like, oh my gosh, BBC, The Guardian, you guys just had the world cast from the BBC. It's the best of times and it's the worst of times, because if you're disengaged, if you don't want to do the work, it is the worst of times. So there is this kind of double thing going on where, you know, for some people, all that noise, they have the ability to curate it, they have the ability to sort it out, and they have the ability to kind of feel well served by it. But for a larger group of people, and the people that I think, you know, when we talk about kind of the productive classes, working people, that's where the crisis really lives.
Yeah, exactly. Because I've even seen, for example, when you write, the small amount that you're already paid for one article is coming down. So it seems like it is a really exciting time for, say, a young person, because there are so many opportunities to write. Well, but as you said, Bob, your reporters aren't being paid. And what happens when they graduate?
They are very brave, is what I will say. But I will also say that they recognize clearly that the world that they're going to work in is going to belong to them, and they have to chart a new course. I mean, this is just my personal opinion. There's plenty of argument on either side. But, you know, look, I have to say it. You know, the greatest generation, the people who've been in the journalism business in the 80s and 90s, and you know, this all happened on our watch. Something went wrong, and we can talk about technology, we can talk about corporate ownership, but what also happened was a disengagement of journalism from kind of everyday people. You know, it's a huge, complicated problem that has to be solved. I have to give my students a lot of credit and a lot of props. I mean, they're not deluded. They know that they're not likely to be swept up by an institution like I was when I started working at KQED in the 80s. So, you know, they are brave and they are dedicated.
That is Bob Kello, executive editor of Richmond Confidential, an online news service produced by the Graduate School of Journalism at UC Berkeley. This is for and about the people of Richmond. They've got 18 full-time reporters covering education, development, politics, culture, a wide range of issues. As Bob said, they're not being paid. They're grad students at UC Berkeley. They're doing excellent work, but where are they going to get a job when they graduate? That's the big question. We're also joined by Robert Gammon, co-editor of the East Bay Express, an alternative weekly newspaper serving Berkeley, Oakland, and the East Bay. And as Robert said, their staff is 75% smaller today than it was, what, Robert, what, 10 years ago?
Yeah, 8 years ago.
8 years ago. That's right. Just incredible. And John McManus is founder of GradeTheNews.org, a consumer report on Bay Area news. And what are your thoughts on this? It does feel like we're overwhelmed with information, but are you finding on a regular basis really good quality information about what's happening in your local community? Where do you go for local news, and what do you want from local news? If there's an outlet that you'd like to talk about or a story that you recently ran across, we'd love to hear from you. And if you work in this field, we'd love to hear from you. 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org or leave a comment on our website. So, John, what are you seeing out there in terms of these hyper-local sites that are popping up? A lot of these sites are funded with foundation money. Some are still trying to make it through ad revenue. I mean, what are your thoughts on just the overall business model that we're dealing with today?
I think these small sites, in general, are underfunded. The journalists are undertrained, and they're not in a sustainable position. So I'm not very hopeful about that. And I wish the future were brighter for people graduating from UC Berkeley's Graduate School of Journalism and other schools. But I think the situation will continue to get worse, as it has been getting worse, until we as a society recognize that going through life blind has great consequences, painful ones. So I think until we understand that journalism is the most important, professional journalism is the most important civic educator, the most important support of an informed democracy. We won't fund it with taxpayer money, but we need to, just as we fund K-12 education as an essential for democracy. I think we're going to have to find safe ways for the government to fund strong local reporting. Hmm. It's true that you have a much greater range of opinions and stories from international media and even at the national level. But at the local level, there's a real serious hole. And I don't see it filling until there is an intervention, because advertisers are still leaving mainstream media and they're not flocking to these small operations in numbers enough to support them.
And they're also not flocking to websites. A study in March by the Pew Research Center's Project for Excellence in Journalism showed that newspapers have been, on average, losing print advertising dollars at 7 times the rate that they have been growing digital ad revenue. So they're not finding ad revenue through online ads. And so, John, are you calling for the government to get involved here and to fund local ventures?
Yeah, I think it needs to, but it needs to be safe, because you have to find some way for the government not to control the message. One way of doing that might be to have a tax checkoff, just as you can now check off for a few dollars to go to political funding of advertising,
public funding of campaigns. You could, for example, as long as a local medium were online for free and available to the community, covering the local community, you could direct maybe $10 or $15 from your taxes to those people, and that money would go directly without any particular government oversight, and the public would that way have a way of directing money to sites that they felt were valuable. There are other ideas out there, but I think we have to find something, because the current trends continue to be negative. As a Mercury News reporter once told me, we still don't know where the bottom floor on this elevator is.
Well, we have a number of listeners on the line who care about local news, so let's hear from John in San Francisco. Hi, John. Welcome to the show.
Yeah, thank you. One input is Anderson Valley Advertiser out of Boonville, California. The editor is Bruce Anderson. And it was written up in the Wall Street Journal as they had a large article on it some time ago about America's last newspaper, possibly America's best newspaper. It's a small town, somewhat controversial. Paraphrase Abraham Lincoln, it doesn't please all the people all the time. Some of the people all the time are very happy with it. And it kind of cries out to be announced on your program. It's addressing directly what you're talking about. It covers local news wonderfully, as opposed to the little kind of establishment chain-operated papers in Ukiah and Santa Rosa.
Mm. All right. Well, thank you. We'll look it up. Thank you, John. Anderson Valley Advertiser. Let's go next to George in San Francisco. Hi, George.
Hey, good morning. This is an encouraging discussion. One thing, unless I'm mistaken, we haven't heard yet, is what is it exactly that we've lost by dispensing with a newsroom, and to what extent can we replace that by individually working out of our apartments? A newsroom has a certain amount of congeniality and crosstalk and criticism and feedback, and if we don't have a newsroom to work out of, what do we replace it? And a similar question, or a stab at a question like this, would be, what's the critical mass? Is 20 people sitting in a room enough, or does it take 200?
All right, well, thank you for calling. Robert, what are your thoughts on that, since you've seen a 75% reduction in your staff at the East Bay Express over the last 8 years?
Well, I think he brings up some very good points. I can say personally that collaborative work in a newsroom is very important. When reporters are talking to each other, reporters and editors are talking to each other in groups, they can hone ideas, come up with better ways of investigating stories, share techniques. I mean, there's a tremendous amount of value lost when you shrink down to a small size. But I don't know what the solution is to that. I mean, as advertising dollars continue to leave journalism, I don't know how you replace that.
Well, that's the big question, and that's what we're talking about today. I'll get you in just a minute. We're going to take a quick break. Today we are talking about the state of local news. We've seen just major, major cutbacks over the last decade or so. Daily newspapers cut their editorial spending by $1.6 billion. From 2006 to 2009, we are seeing so many local news sites pop up, a lot of these hyper local sites like Richmond Confidential, for example, that are covering traditionally undercovered communities. So that's a good thing. But the question is, will they be around in a couple of years? And we'd love to hear from you on this. What do you want from local news, and where do you go for local news? It's your call. We'll be back after this.
This is Your Call on KALW, a show that relies on engaged listeners. You can join today's conversation if you're listening during the morning hours by calling 866-798-TALK. That's 866-798-7255. 8255. Or you can post a comment or question anytime at yourcallradio.org, where you'll also find links related to today's show. And that's where you can sign up for the show's weekly email newsletter. Just click the email newsletter link on the right side of the page at yourcallradio.org.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, it's our Friday Media Roundtable. We will discuss coverage of President Obama's nomination of Chuck Hagel for Secretary of Defense and Sylvia Burwell, nominee for the Office of Management and Budget. She is currently president of the Walmart Foundation. So we'll find out her role at Walmart and why she's been nominated to head the OMB. We will also talk about the ongoing conflict and war in Mali. And then next week on Monday, based on the show we did on Keystone, because so many people didn't realize that unions are supporting the Keystone XL oil pipeline, we decided to have a dialogue between environmentalists and labor. So that's on Monday. And if you have a show idea or a guest idea, you can drop us a line, feedback@yourcallradio.org. Today we are talking about the state of local news. Our guest, John McManus, says that we're currently dealing with an implosion of journalism. He's the founder of GradeTheNews.org, a consumer report on Bay Area news. He's author of Market-Driven Journalism, Let the Citizen Beware. We're also joined by Bob Callow, executive editor of Richmond Confidential, an online news service produced by the Graduate School of Journalism at UC Berkeley for the people of Richmond. They've got 18 full-time reporters covering a wide range of issues, and none of them are paid. They're all grad students from UC Berkeley. Bob is also a senior lecturer at UC Berkeley's Graduate School of Journalism. And Robert Gammon is co-editor of the East Bay Express, an alternative weekly newspaper serving Berkeley, Oakland, and the East Bay, and they have lost 75% of their staff over the past 8 years. And Robert's gone through all of this. He's been there since 2004. We'd love to hear from you. Where do you turn for local news? If there's a site or a paper that you would like to give kudos to, we'd love to hear from you. How has it been affected by these cutbacks? And also, you know, what kind of issues did you read about 10 years ago that you might not be reading about today? What do you want from local news? The toll-free number is 866-798-8255. 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org or leave a comment on our website. And Rich and Ben Lomond called. He couldn't stay on, but he wanted to plug the Connection magazine in Santa Cruz County. And thank you for that, Rich. We'll find it and then put a link on our website right after the show. Again, that's the Connection magazine in Santa Cruz County. And let's next go to Harry in San Francisco. Hi, Harry.
Hi, yes, good morning, Rose. I wanted to point out that there's been, in addition to the fact that the Bay Guardian, the SF Weekly, and the Examiner have shrunk to shadows of their former selves, they're also owned by the same entity now.
Yeah, I'm so glad you brought that up. The Guardian recently got bought by the same company as the Weekly?
Right.
Is that right? And what's the company?
No. What happened is the Examiner purchased the Bay Guardian first,
okay,
and then it just recently purchased the SF Weekly.
Right, so they're both now owned by the same company, and the editor said, don't worry, we're going to remain independent. Our editorial opinions will not be changing. So, Harry, I know that you're a huge consumer of local news. Have you seen changes since the buyout?
I understand that I think before that they already trimmed their staff, so I'm not sure there's anybody left to fire, or else they'd only have advertising. But I also noticed that all publications in San Francisco called Supervisor Scott Weiner and Mark Farrell, for example, whom I consider to be right-wing conservatives, as moderates, and the people that are not even, you know, we wouldn't even call them liberals. We would call them even maybe Rockefeller Republicans in the 1960s or today, so-called progressives. And the Chronicle fired their investigative reporters a long time ago, so there's no investigative journalism going on at all, despite the fact that there are all these incredible scandals in city government.
And I know you follow that closely. Well, thank you. So, John, why don't you address that? How is this affecting the politics of coverage and just the nuances that Harry mentioned that a lot of us you know, might not notice unless we're closely paying attention?
Yeah, I think the first thing to say is that it's always better when people compete, when you have several different organizations, news organizations, competing to cover a story, because what one reporter may focus on, another may not. And each news organization has sacred cows, so if you have multiple reporters covering the same thing, you're likely to get a much fuller picture. So these kinds of consolidations...
You know, John, can you move? We're getting
yeah.
a bad line. Okay, that might be better.
So...
Oops.
So what
I think we'll try calling you back because we can't hear you very well. Robert, do you want to jump in there? Because you spent 6 years as a reporter with the Oakland Tribune.
So. Well, I think that's true. I think what John is saying is definitely true. I mean, the more reporters that you have from different organizations covering issues, I mean, there's one thing I know about reporters. I have many friends who are in journalism, and they're all very competitive. I mean, it's just a part of the nature of being a reporter. And so you're trying to get the best story, dig a little bit farther, get what the other paper doesn't have. That's definitely true. In this case, though, I think that, you know, I'm not sure that the Bay Guardian or the SF Weekly would have survived if the Examiner hadn't purchased them. You know, so it may be that this is keeping these companies in business, which in the long run may turn out to be a good thing.
So they really had no alternative.
Right.
Well, what about the East Bay Express? Because obviously, I'm assuming that you can't make any more cuts, right? How are you going to get creative to make sure you can continue doing good reporting?
Well, you know, our sales staff is doing all kinds of creative work trying to attract new revenue. And so, you know, we're basically trying everything possible. In terms of the editorial side, we're doing everything we can to attract more readers to our website, to, you know, make the East Bay Express even still a must-read in East Bay. And I think we've done a good job with that, despite the cutbacks we've endured.
Do you also get financial support from your readers?
At this point, no, we do not. We are all advertising supported.
All right. Well, and also I wanted to address Harry's question about corruption because, you know, I still subscribe to the San Francisco Chronicle, and I have to say what I really do love about it is, I guess, the more human interest stories. They did this great piece recently about how a lot of people have not been to the dentist in 10 years because they don't have insurance. And even if you do, usually dental work isn't covered. And so they're going to the emergency room for these basic problems. And it was just, you don't really hear much about dental during the healthcare debate. And they tend to do a really good job of, you know, finding out how court systems are not throwing people in jail and they're putting them in drug treatment programs, that kind of thing. But I think that's really helpful and great. But Harry makes a good point that there is very little coverage about political corruption. What are your thoughts about that, Robert? Is it easier to do the stories about, you know, just how people are trying to survive than it is about political corruption?
Sure. I mean, you know, doing investigative reporting takes a lot of time and effort. And, you know, obviously, if you start to put a newspaper out, you have fewer people in order to do that. You're going to have less time for each individual reporter to dig into stories. That's just the way it is. And Harry's right. You know, the Chronicle a number of years ago did get rid of this entire investigative team. At one time, they had a really good one. They had some great investigative stories. I remember a piece that they did on, you know, close accidents at SF Airport, which was terrific. And so you're just not going to see that anymore. And what John said earlier is also true. You know, we don't know what we don't know. And so it's unknown what kind of corruption is going on that isn't being reported.
John, what would you add to that? We do have, for example, California Watch, which is founded by the Center for Investigative Reporting. They do amazing investigative work, and they focus on issues like corruption. But what are your thoughts about what's in store for the future of really uncovering these issues?
You know, there are still some wonderful things being, wonderful pieces being written, and some investigative reporting survives, but the sheer volume of it is way down from what it was 5-10 years ago. So I think that, and I think it will continue to decrease because, as Bob pointed out, it's very expensive. I wanted to add something also to George's question about what happens when you no longer have a newsroom, you have people who are doing news individually. Newsrooms offered insulation from pressure to their journalists. They weren't journalists, typically didn't have to sell ads, and they were a separate place from the selling of ads, that function. And if they did engage in any kind of conflict of interest, they'd be fired. And there were understood conventions of journalism. The Code of Ethics of the Society of Professional Journalists prevailed in most of these newsrooms. And you don't have those kinds of protections if one person who is doing the news is also trying to drum up ads. So I think that's another problem with this model of the dispersed newsroom.
And I wanted to mention a report over at California Watch that you all might be interested in. Despite budget woes, superintendents' pay rises. And this is the kind of reporting that I think Harry was also talking about 24 of the largest school districts on the state's financial watch list have raised their superintendent's salary since 2009. So just to give kudos to California Watch. And today on Your Call, we are talking about the state of local journalism. We've seen so many cutbacks over the years, and there are a lot of sites that are popping up, a lot of these hyper-local sites that focus on communities that have been traditionally ignored, like Richmond, for example. Bob Callow is executive editor of Richmond Confidential, an online news service produced by the Graduate School of Journalism at UC Berkeley. They've got 18 full-time reporters covering issues of importance to the people of Richmond. Unfortunately, these reporters are not being paid. They're grad students at UC Berkeley. Robert Gammon is co-editor of the East Bay Express, an alternative weekly serving the East Bay. And unfortunately, they've seen their staff cut by 75% in the last 8 years. And John McManus is founder of GradeTheNews.org, a consumer report on Bay Area news. He's author of Market-Driven Journalism, Let the Citizen Beware. And we have full lines, but we'll have one open in just a few minutes, 866-798-8255. You can also post a comment to our website so others can see it, especially if you have a local site you'd like us to know about, yourcallradio.org, or email feedback@yourcallradio.org. And let's go next to Fanny in Oakland. Hi, Fanny. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Good morning. An observation I've made traveling around the country, which I do a lot at ground level, is that more conservative areas tend to have better local coverage, including newspapers. There's more interest in it. And what I've sort of noted in general is that conservatives are more interested, it would seem to me, in local activities, local politics, and liberals more into things far from home. So most leftists pay attention to international politics, a little less to national, not so much to what goes on in Sacramento and less here, whereas conservative people in the local areas start in with school boards, PTAs, take over them, organize around them, and then move out. And I think that affects coverage of local journalism.
Oh, that's interesting, and that's a great point. So what are you seeing, Fanny, when you say you see better local news coverage? What's better exactly?
I see more. I see more interest in smaller towns, and when I go through, I will look at bulletin boards, I will look at newspapers, they will have papers. You know, they will know about what is going on in their schools. It will be covered in little papers. And it seems, again, this is just anecdotal, that local advertisers do support those.
Interesting. John, what are your thoughts on that?
I think it's a function of size, perhaps more than political ideology. And that is that in small communities, you don't have the same kind of pressures on newspapers that you do in larger ones. For example, Craigslist only exists in the larger communities, and so you're not losing all that classified money. And the agrarian communities that are served oftentimes by these smaller papers, there's less connection. So I think that the economic model in the smaller papers is more sound, and therefore they haven't suffered quite the same erosion of advertising support. So they have more resources to do the kind of local news.
All right. Well, thank you, Fanny. Really interesting observations as you're lucky enough to travel around the country. Let's go next to Jeff in Berkeley. Hi, Jeff. Welcome to the show.
Hi. One of the problems, and this last comment really hit it true, we're all in the San Francisco Bay Area. We're not projectable. My politics are liberal Democrat. I come from Michigan, which is, you know, you get away from Detroit, just incredibly conservative. And I think the local markets really take good care of the conservative mindset, which is why a state like Michigan, it gets controlled by a governor that's absolutely, I think, ruining the state. But out here, I look in Berkeley, where I've lived for 40 years, and all my focus has been in business. So I'm not I'm tied to business type things. But I look at, there's a new website, whatever the word you would use, called Berkeleyside, that seems to do an interesting job of local news. I don't know how hard-nosed they will be really getting their hands in and, let's say, taking on the police department, and how inefficiently maybe they're run and how high their pay scales are in relation to the rest of the world. I just don't know whether they've got the guts to do that or whatever. They're fairly new. And then what do I read? I read the New York Times online. I read it when I, two or three times a week, I buy the paper, and I'm about to start again. I hate to do it, the Wall Street Journal, because I got a great rate on it. But the point is, I'm focused more on national stuff, and the local stuff gets lost. And I look at the Chronicle, and I'll stop in a second. The Chronicle is a shadow of itself. I mean, it's almost embarrassing. You get into the business section, you've got four pages. I mean, it's pathetic.
Yeah, and it seems to
some
be.
Some of that's been.
Yeah, it seems to be getting smaller by the week. Well, thank you so much. Did you want to go on?
No, just any comments on Berkeleyside. And the other thing is the East Bay Express, phenomenal through the years. I've probably read it for, it seems like 20 years. And it really does a good investigative reporting, incredibly good. But, you know, the pressures on the business model for a paper like that are just make it tough.
And let me ask you this, Jeff, and I'd love to ask listeners in our remaining 8 or so minutes, do you actually support the media that you appreciate? Obviously, subscriptions support, but do you support papers like East Bay Express?
No, I mean, I read it and I go to their advertisers. I guess that's a support. There's some others that I get. Alternet is one.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like right in Berkeley, there's some sort of foundation, and it's funded by the founders of Golden West Savings and Loan, the family that founded that. And they do very good investigative reporting, and they do it on a national level. They fund all kinds of things, and your people they're on will know the name of it.
All right. Well, thank you for calling in. So you mentioned Berkeleyside. I just looked them up. Launched in 2009, Berkeleyside was founded and produced by 3 veteran journalists, and I understand that one of them is calling in right now. Hi, Tracy. Is this Tracy Taylor?
Yes, that's right.
Hi. Thanks for calling in.
You're welcome.
So tell us a little bit about Berkeleyside and how it got started.
Sure. So we actually launched 3 years ago, as you said, and we're all journalists by profession. And we felt there was a real gap in the market for exactly what you've been talking about, local news done well, very thorough. I mean, the previous caller talked about whether we were brave enough to take on the authorities and, you know, report on maybe the police accountability, that sort of thing. We've done a lot of that. And I think it's also worth noting, actually, that you've been talking about the lack of local news in the big regional papers. We are actually, since we have been going, as I say, for 3 years, we've actually started providing Berkeley news to the San Francisco Chronicle. And we also have a partnership with KQED where we give them Berkeley news too. So I think it's an interesting sort of evolution in the way regional news has happened, that somebody like us who are covering it at a very sort of granular level are being called upon now to supply that news to the larger, to the sort of more regional media.
And what do you foresee in the next few years in terms of funding? And how do you all pay yourselves? Because we're getting a few emails from listeners saying it's not fair that people do this hard work and either they can't make ends meet or they're not being paid at all.
We do pay ourselves. We're funded largely by advertising, but we're also getting a lot of reader support. We reach out to our readers and we ask them if they'll give us, sort of a monthly, sometimes as little as $5 a month, the equivalent to subscribing to a newspaper, except we're not, we're only online, but we're asking them for, if they like what they see, if they like what we're providing if they can become sort of members. It's a sort of membership program model. And so we're doing that, and that's an increasingly important part of our revenue.
All right. Well, thank you so much for calling in. And Bob, you're, again, executive editor of Richmond Confidential. Is there a cross-pollination, I guess, conversation happening between these different sites so you can all support each other's work? Because the other thing that sometimes happens is you might do a really great investigative piece. The challenge is to get it out there so we see it.
Yeah, no, I mean, partnerships are the name of the game in this universe. There's a site called Richmond Pulse, which is youth reporting. We have their stuff on our site. We even have the Contra Costa Times on our site. Berkeley Side does a great job. We are partners with various kind of web associated press. I mean, there is something emerging. A lot of this has to do with a shift, technological shift, that people like me and Bob and John and you are uncomfortable with because we came out of a different era. And, you know, there's plenty of reason to be gloomy, and I can be gloomy just like everyone else. But this is, you know, when this happened to auto workers, when this happened to people cutting trees, we said, oh, it's technology. You know, they'll just have to figure it out. We have to figure it out. So I think that's part of it. I have to say, it's fascinating to me we have not mentioned local television. Now, that's a common whipping boy. Everyone who's in the journalism reform business has been trashing local TV for decades. However, when Pew does its annual study of trust in the media, and they rank trust, the most trusted form, and I know this is kind of counterintuitive, but I, you know, is local television. So let's end local commercial and non-commercial radio. So there's something about locality. I think the comment about small communities being focused on issues is fascinating and profound and important. And I think that's kind of this idea of really believing in local coverage, that it's important, that your democracy lives locally. The national thing is ideological. There's political battles. There's all kinds of other forces there. But on the local level, which is the local level we live at, there is work to be done, and there are things to be reclaimed. So I'm not Pollyanna at all, but, you know, I think this is where the action is going to be. And we're all looking for different kinds of solutions.
Well, and we've got a number of emails about this. Art writes in and says, what can we do about this? Could several independent news organizations like KALW, KPFA, Indy Media band together to publish an alternative monthly or weekly California news journal or significant political stories that the mainstream ignores? Could this work? Thank you, Art. We also have an email from Brecken who says, thanks for this topic. I've been working in PR since the 90s and have sadly watched most of my colleagues in the newsroom lose their jobs while the papers have shrunk in both size and scope of reporting. My job, excuse me, as a publicist has morphed from cultivating reporters and editors to niche marketing. While we have skills and approach have changed to match the trends, I remain deeply concerned about the consolidation of local media to national and international news and the loss of critical journalism. The hope that has kept me engaged has been radio. KALW in particular has taken, in my opinion, the lead in producing high-quality stories about the Bay Area. Please keep it up. This is a huge topic, and please shine a light on this. And John, What are your thoughts on just, you know, what the people want and what they're willing to do to ensure that this content remains?
I hope that people will value the quality journalism and support it by paying for subscriptions or by subscribing to KLW, KQED, other providers of that.
KUSP.
I'd like to see NPR change to NPM. National Public Media, and have strong local online coverage organized through NPR because they've established expertise and quality. And that might be a way to shine light on local situations that's currently not being accomplished.
And anything else to add there, Bob, about, you know, what people who value local news can do about this?
In terms of the East Bay Express and Berkeley Side, it's all about, you know, folks being really interested in local news. And so the more people who pick up our paper, the more people who come to our website, same thing with Berkeley Side and other local sites, the more successful we'll be because we can then go to advertisers and say, hey, listen, we have this audience who is coming to our site or picking up our paper. And so if you want to get your product in front of this audience, you should go with us. And that's the traditional model of newspapering. And I don't think it's I mean, although it's slowly withering, it's not dead yet, that's for sure. And so there's definitely potential out there.
And Fanny just sent us another email saying back in the 60s, Berkeley had a number of papers, The Tribe, The Barb, New Morning, that focused on local issues. These alternative papers exploded around the country. San Jose had four. There was even one in Barstow. Mostly they were staffed by those of us who were dedicated to what we were doing. How many listeners actually pay for a paper or pay for the media? He says, I subscribe to the Times just as a way to support that level of investigative journalism rather than support the political groups I might otherwise have given money to. And we also have an email from Don that says advertising revenue has been completely sucked up by Google and totally data mined and sold to the highest bidder. John McManus, what are your final thoughts on this? Where do you see this going in the next few years?
I unfortunately think the decline will continue. I think advertisers have found a more direct and cost-effective way to consumers and will continue to abandon news media. I think we need new models. Perhaps, you know, as I say, increased government funding of a non-invasive sort. We need people to subscribe, perhaps, to local media. I hate to be pessimistic, but I suspect that we will not do these things until we begin to discover what we've lost and how blind we have become on matters that are incredibly important for us to know about and make informed decisions about.
Robert McChesney's out with a new book about media, and he says that the government spends more on U.S. military music, like bands, than it does on public broadcasting.
McChesney's book, The Death and Life of American Journalism, ought to be must-reading for people who are concerned about this question. It's a brilliant book.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you so much. We'll definitely continue following this. There's so much interest out there. John McManus is founder of GradeTheNews.org. Bob Callow is executive editor of Richmond Confidential. And Robert Gammon is co-editor of the East Bay Express. Thank you all for joining us.
Thank you.
My pleasure. You're welcome.
Thank you. And thank you for your phone calls and emails. Thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's your call. And here's what's coming up tomorrow. On the next Your Call, it's our Friday Media Roundtable. This week, we'll discuss coverage of President Obama's nomination of Chuck Hagel for Secretary of Defense and Sylvia Burwell, nominee for the Office of Management and Budget. She's currently president of the Walmart Foundation. We'll also talk about the ongoing war in Mali. We'll be joined by the nation's Lee Fang, Salon's Alex Seitz-Wald, and independent journalist Anna Bodkin. What did you see the best reporting this week? It's Your Call with me, Rose Aguilar, and you. Support for Your Call comes from the listeners of KALW. To sign up for our podcast or newsletter, or to share the show on Facebook or Twitter, visit yourcallradio.org. Malihe Razazan and Ali Budner produce the show. Matt Martin is our executive producer. Phil Hartman is our chief engineer, and David LaTulipe is the studio engineer. Our theme music was composed and performed by Live Human. Your Call is produced by KALW in San Francisco. Special thanks to our partners at KUSP in Santa Cruz. You can email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org.